Welcome to Not Work Myth and Storytelling. This is the show where ancestral wisdom meets the modern imagination and our timeless connection to the land itself. Season 7, Episode 7, A Tale of Two Poets with Kate Chadbourne. Our guest, Kate Chadbourne, is a storyteller, singer, harper, poet, professor of Irish language and folklore, and the founder of the Celtic Wisdom School. Her debut novel, The Poet on the Train, was published in 2025. You can find her at katechadbourne.com and find the stories she tells each week over on YouTube at Kate Chadbourne Bard. We open with the strange and wonderful Irish medieval tale of two poets, Avergan and Athernia, which is found in the Book of Leinster. And then the conversation blossoms. This is an episode for creatives. If you've ever felt too raw, too unformed, too messy to call yourself a poet or a writer, Avergan is your guardian and your guide. I think you'll feel the same way about Kate. This is also an episode for lovers of the Irish language. Kate is one of the warmest teachers I know. And by that, I mean teachers of any discipline, but especially the Irish language. As you listen, you'll learn a few new phrases, including a beautiful collection of endearments. There's something special in being able to say my love and my darling in the Irish. And finally, this episode is for anyone who fears that they might abandon something that they love. Kate shares when, midway through her novel, she nearly stopped. I'm so grateful that she shared a bit of her process with us and that she got through that creative rough spot because The Poet on the Train is simply a gem. Well, I'm so grateful to welcome you to Not Work Myth and Storytelling. I am your host, Marisa Gowdy, and I am thrilled to say Fulcha once again to Kate Chadbourne, who returns to the show for, I believe, the third time. So, as is our way on Not Work Myth and Storytelling, we first ask the story to speak for itself, and then we'll explore all the ways that it resonates and matters. So Kate, you're here again. I'm so glad. Would you tell us a story?
Thank you so much for having me, Marisa. I'm delighted to be with you, and I'm so happy that we're here with everybody in your storytelling world. So I'm going to tell you a story. Fado fado in Éirinn, bhí gabhadh an uair amháin, agus an tanam a bhí air na Egid Salach. Once long ago in Ireland, there was a blacksmith, and his name was Egid Salach, which is Dirty Egid. And of course he was dirty. He was a blacksmith and he was dirty all the day. Well, he had one son, and this son was known as a very unlikely and unpromising lad. Let me tell you about him. He was black of face and white of teeth. He had spiky, crazy looking hair. I'm sad to say, and please everybody forgive me for these things, but the snot would run from his nose right into his mouth. He had never spoken, though he was 14 years old. His feet were cloven. His back was bent and scabby. And here's the horrible part. If he were left in one place too long, the excrement would pile up as far as his hips. Yes, so he was not handsome, according to the medieval manuscript from whence this comes. He was not handsome. His favorite foods to eat were all strange and wild. He loved the wild garlic. He loved unripe blackberries. He loved hollow nuts. He loved salt that came from seaweed. He was a very strange, strange lad. Well, one day, Athernia was the chief poet of Ireland. He, in fact, his name, Athernia, may be related to the word which means fatherly. It also might be related to the word that means satire. And sure enough, Athernia wielded satire like a weapon. In fact, he was of the old school that believed that if you asked a king for something and you were a poet, the king had to provide that. Otherwise, there would be dire consequences. So one time, Athernia asked a one-eyed king for his only functioning eye, and he got it. That's the way Athernia was. Well, he sent his right-hand man, Greth, on an errand with an axe to be sharpened at Egid Salach's forge. And when Greth entered the forge, he looked around and he saw this very strange kid sitting there eating all of these odd foods off of a table. And he looked at him and he thought that this kid scowled at him. But actually, the boy who had never spoken before said these words, Inith Greth Gruth. Inith Greth Gruth. A third time, of course. Inith Greth Gruth, which means, does Greth eat curds? Because he loved to eat curds. And when Greth heard that, his face turned white as a sheet. He turned on his heel and he ran from the forge. And he ran straight back to Athernia, who looked at him and said, have you just come from a battle? Or why do you look like you've seen a ghost? What's happened to you at all? And Greth said, this is what happened. I've just met the boy who will replace you as chief poet of all Ireland, no doubt. And he told him about what Avrigan had said to him, Avrigan the boy. And of course, as soon as Athernia knew that, he said, we will not let that happen. We will not let that happen. Meanwhile, back at the forge, Egid Salach came back in from wherever he had been, and he saw Avrigan's beautiful sister sitting on her chair, and he said, what happened while I was gone? And she told him about Greth's errand, and she also told him about what her brother Avrigan had said. And Egid Salach stood very still for a moment, and then he said, you know what this means. This means they will try to kill him. We'll have to find a way to avoid that happening. And so he sent Avrigan and Avrigan's sister up to a little house in the Highlands. And he made a clay effigy of Avrigan and put it in Avrigan's bed. It looked just like him. You would mistake it for him in a moment. And that night, under the cover of darkness, who creeps in but Athernia and Greth? And they're carrying an axe that was sharp, so sharp. And they crept up to the bed, and with no pity or mercy or compassion, Athernia swung the axe and brought it down, and to his eye, he parted the head from Avrigan's shoulders. But just then the dogs began to bark, and the two of them fled and ran off into the night. But you know, everyone knew what had happened, and everyone knew who had done it. And so it was about a month later when they went into the court, and there was a court case, and the finding was that Athernia had to pay a loge eneach, which is a face price. That's literally the loge. The eneach is the face, and the loge is price. The loge eneach, a face price, an honor price, in the amount of 21 cows, which is that which would be paid for the chief poet of Ireland, although Avrigan was not a chief poet yet. But nevertheless, Athernia was, it was insisted that he pay this, and what's more, the justice insisted that Athernia take Avrigan on as his poetic apprentice and teach him everything he knew. And so that's what happened. Over the next years, Athernia taught Avrigan what he knew. And many years from then, when Athernia lay dying, Avrigan became the chief poet of all of Ireland. Sinéad Mhaiscialsa, Má Tá Bríogán Bíú. That's my story. If there's a lie in it, so be it.
Knotwork is a listener-supported show. And if these stories and conversations mean something to you, then becoming a paid subscriber to the Mythworkers' Hearth over on Substack is the most direct way to keep the podcast going. As my thank you, paid subscribers receive Tourists, a series of special episodes that go deeper into the mythical, imaginal, and physical landscapes at the heart of this work. It's the journey within the journey. As a paid subscriber, you're also invited to join our monthly hearth gatherings, live storytelling, writing, and conversation with fellow myth-minded companions. You can find the link to subscribe to the Mythworkers Hearth in the show notes or visit us at mythworkers.com.
Oh, Kate, it is such a delight to hear your voice in the Irish and the English and your storyteller's lilt and your laughter. Oh, thank you for this story of transformation and misunderstanding and apprenticeship and justice and destiny. And certainly don't judge a book by its cover and don't judge a poet by his lack of language or cloven hooves. Wow.
Or other things piling up to his hips, even.
Never mind the
Maybe we
snot.
could think of those as rough drafts, maybe for those of us who are writers, right? Those are the rough drafts piling up. Yes. Oh, thank you for inviting me to tell the story. It's a wonderful story, and it moves me so much. It, you know, I feel, and I know you are the same, that I want to take the part of young creators for sure. I'm on their side. I'm on this, and when I say young, I mean anyone who is young in creating as well as young in age, right? Everybody needs that. Everyone needs someone to take their part. And so when I hear about this young boy who's doesn't have language yet and who is seen as this unlikely, unpromising thing, and yet he hides so much promise and so much genius, my heart is with him and with all the young creators who are not seen. That's I think our job as grown-up creators is to see our younger brothers and sisters, to see and to give them a hand up, and certainly not to swing an axe at them.
And this story certainly, takes that sense of the diamond in the rough and makes it, time to a factor of 462, because there's almost a level of discomfort as you're first sharing this story. It's like, wait a minute, there's this young boy, is he, has disabilities, like he's has deformities, he's a changeling, and how is he, how
Yes.
he's presented at first. And I think it makes our modern sensibilities go, oh, wait now, are we, can we tell a story quite like this? Because we've gotten very careful around telling certain tales. And I love that this story says, no, here he is in his fullness, is how he was understood and seen in the time. And however he came through the lenses of the teller, the redactors of those who first wrote the stories down. And that just
Yes.
becomes such joy in what else unfolds after the first beginnings of him being utterly repellent, and you giving us that, giving him to us without his edges rounded off and without prettifying or pulling back any of the details.
Hear, hear. I think actually we need more of him, frankly. I think we need more of those voices in the world. And I also, when I look at this story, I look at it as aspects of ourselves. I do look at the distinction between this kind of protean instinctual self that is not schooled, that is not on Instagram, friends, just to say, and then the institutional poet. Who has got it all together and has a title and has an honor prize and has all of that? There is a distinction between them, and there's an animosity, and there's a contention between them that I think we have to notice in ourselves and also in the world. So when I think of this story, I think of all of these as parts of ourselves, and even Egid Salah. Egid Salah is interesting. It's interesting we have a blacksmith in this tale, right? Who's mediating this immense change, who's protecting this potential, right? He himself is described as Salah, as dirty. So he's kind of on both sides, right? That we know the blacksmith had a very high honor prize himself, and he was considered one of the free people, more or less, a high status person. At the same time, he's working in transformation all day. That's what he's doing, is transforming one thing into another. And that's what poets do, right? Is transform the raw material of language into something that can move and shape us. And I think also it's interesting that when we think about the poems of early Ireland, what we have and what actual the institutional poets did, they came out with pretty conventional things. I wish I could say that was different, but it's not.
Right.
really what they were doing is praising leaders, praising, they were like political poets. On the other hand, we have this guy who eats the raw garlic and the hollow nuts and the salty seaweed and curds, and he is the germ of poetry. He's that poetry that hasn't been schooled yet, that hasn't. We see it in children, we see it in people starting out, and I think we still have it in ourselves if we can listen, if we can allow that also to be there alongside our need for recognition and inclusion in that kind of institution, the creative institutions of the world. They're there. So this is part of a whole, right, the genre of poetic rebirth stories we have with Finn McCool, of course, and in Wales we have with Taliesin, and both of them are crazy little guys before they become poets, right?
And I'm
Right?
not
Finn's
sure.
name is Devna, if you remember. Devna, which means demon. And Taliesin's name is Gwion Bach, which means little Mr. Poison. In fact, sort of the Gwion, the O-N is a divine suffix. So it's like divine little Mr. Poison.
That's one hell of an Instagram handle.
Sure.
Oh, so I'm not even sure. You maybe you said the word and maybe you didn't in the mix of this. Like this really is that sense of the classic, and like we can call it that, division between the wild and the domesticated, right? Whether it's that wild creative urge or it's I think we've turned wild into a beautiful modern ideal, but we still sort of it's looking at that sense of like, oh, I'd love to cultivate the wild within me, but I really want it to be aesthetically pleasing and I want to look kind of hot while I do it. And I rather adore that that is the absolute opposite of what's here. Like the wild is the muck. The wild is the absolutely, it's obviously the untamed, but it's that, as you said, the protean stuff that it might not turn
Yes.
into anything that is well designed enough to become pleasing and beautiful and revelatory, but it might.
But it might. That's it exactly. I think of the Irish proverb, I love this one, being gach tosach lag. Every beginning is weak, right? So those beginnings are, as you say, mucky and messy and ungainly and not photogenic. And we all have them in ourselves right now. Whatever age you are, whatever wherever you are in your creative life or whatever, that the muck of that, which is the fertile muck, is in us all. And really, to me, a lot of this story is about, so how does that basically that the ego, the outward facing self handle the ambiguity and paradox of that the muck, that creative potential. And you can I think what I really love here is that, of course, the end of the story has that mentorship, has that coming together, and that's the kind of holy wedding that we're always looking for, right? I know it's not a wedding, but it's the bringing together of the
Healing.
opposites, right? So that we can, it's kind of like I've never liked it when people glorify it. They're like, oh, be as a child always. And it's like, well, no, because imagine if the world were just children, the mess it would be in all the time. And as I love to say, there'd be no stoplights, there nothing. It would be a mess. We need both of these. I'm not trying to glorify just the African part of us. We do need, and we thrive with some of the institutional parts of us, but we need to put them in some kind of loving relationship.
In my work, I often think about it as the straight lines we need to hold our spirals.
Well said. I love that.
If you ever want to draw a Celtic knot well, right, you need to draw out a grid system in order to make the spirals work.
Right. It, I know, I think often about when Robert Frost was asked about blank verse, and he said it's like playing tennis without a net, right? So formal constraints that actually, I was with a group of people recently, and I was asked, inviting them to write a poem, and one of the young women said, oh goodness, I'm sorry, I thought poems had to rhyme. And she read her poem. And the amazing thing was, because she had applied that formal constraint to her poem, she had been so ingenious and innovative with language because she thought that. So we do, right? We do, as you say, we need the straight lines to contain the spirals. We need both of these parts of ourselves, but we can't, I think, without the mess, though, we have a hollowness. We have the sham. We have the people who are glorifying creativity but not doing a lot of it, right? And that's, I don't want that to sound unsympathetic, because it's easy right now. The performance of a thing is glorified over the doing of a the actual just, hello, I'm just over here, a person living. But on the other hand, if we just have that potential and that protean mess, we never put our stuff into a form and share it. We don't have, right? Like it's the difference between a whole stack of sheets of paper on the ground and a finished chapbook that you can share with your friends. So we need both of those things, I think.
Oh my gosh, Kate, there's so much here. The one thing I know I want to name that's just so real for me that you're bringing up at this moment is how I've been trying to be more intentional about making my everyday a little bit more beautiful, to the degree of like allowing myself to use the stickers and put them in my journal, even though no one's ever going to see it but me. I was inspired by a friend who visited last weekend, and she's one of those beings who just lives this, right? And the distinction of recognizing how much of my beauty for performance is so related to my work. And I know that I'm in the muck of it a lot of the time, but for those of us who are public creatives in any way, you realize, oh, do I have any juice left to remember to create incidental beauty around myself? Wait, could I give myself that luxury and that time and that space? And oh God, okay, rather than just going to bed and, watching something on my iPad for a little while, I'm going to create a little bit more intentional beauty that may never go anywhere, unless, of course, it inspires me to create the next thing that becomes the next thing that becomes, oh my goodness, I never could have done it if not for the wolf sticker I put on the notebook.
Here, I'm all about the stickers. I must say, I'm mad about stickers and washi tape. In fact, if I need to lift my spirits, I go to my journal and put a sticker in it. And it's like instant lift. Yes, I love that so much. And I mean, I've always said my kind of studio rule here is use it up. Use it up. When I was a kid, it was like a really big deal to get a beautiful set of markers. And one time, like, I hoarded the markers and they dried up. And it taught me something so important. I was like, right, the time is now. Use the markers, use the stickers. I think a lot about not performing the stuff, but actually living the stuff, right? Before, 20 years ago, even to put it that far back, we used to just do things and they weren't documented. We just did them,
Did them.
right? And how good that was for us. And there's nothing wrong with inspiring other people. I think I take so much inspiration from people online and from people in the world and from all the books and the music and everything. I love it so much and I'm so grateful for it. And I also love the privacy of my own experience so much. But I loved what you were saying. And, I just wanted to give you one more great Irish expression. I've been thinking a lot about the word blah of flower. And, to do what you're doing, like making beauty in your house, it's curtu blah ar dheath. Literally, you put a flower on your house. So I found an expression in Father Dineen's Irish dictionary. And if anybody here is learning Irish, that's like such a treasure trove. And he said, "Níl blá na sláth ar an teach ó Jimmy." There's no flower or neatness. Sláth is like discipline or neatness or tidiness on the house since she left. So that was his way of explaining one aspect of blah. So we can put the blah on our lives today, right? Meaning put a flower on our lives. put a flower in any part of ourselves, and whether we show it or not, you're putting the blah on your life when you put a sticker in your journal.
Oh my word. Okay, so this is the part. So those who've heard you on the show before know that you and I have history, right? But I feel like it's important to name because I feel like it's all coming together in this moment. You mentioned 20 years ago when we didn't document things. We just did the math to realize that we were sitting together about 30 years ago because Kate was my very first Irish teacher. And in the course of this conversation, Kate, I have just remembered something, and now I need to go back to my journal from 1997 because I just remembered I believe I put my journal in your hands, and you would have written out a series of Irish endearments for me because I was about to take my first trip to Ireland to go visit my first love, who was a he was doing his junior year abroad. I was a freshman in college. And if I go back to find the little black books, which I won't find them now, but I do need to hold, it would have literally been this journal, which I've been refilling with little black books ever since 1997.
Oh my goodness.
And I think you would have written in the very first black book I ever put in here because I received this for my high school graduation and you were my freshman in college Irish teacher.
That's an honor. I love that, and I hope I would love to see it again.
I'm
But
going to
I think
find it.
endearments, yes. Endearments, let's use them, right?
Yes,
A store.
a store.
Everyone can learn that one. A store.
And a
I hope
kushla.
everyone at home will say a chushla, my pulse,
Yes,
right? Right? A
yes.
ra. Achriyashti, my dearest one, the heart inside. Isn't that beautiful? So, Achri, oh heart, oh my love. Achriyashti, my dearest, oh heart within. So, they're so beautiful.
Are there any endearments that have blah, that have flower in them, I wonder?
Well, people, there's a lot about being like the blah gyal, the brightest and the most brilliant flower is kind of like the prettiest, the most beautiful. And then there's Bláth na hÉige, which is the flower of youth. But I'm encouraging everyone, actually, number one, to see yourself in your youth, in whatever youth, especially in your creative life. Like
Yes,
maybe
yes.
you're trying something new or making an experiment in some way. See yourself there. But I just was teaching people that I think it's really powerful to say, Kame fui vla, right? I'm in bloom. Say that. Now, and I was also teaching people that Father Deneen always, when he lists a verb, he lists it in the first person singular. So this verb here, instead of blahi, which is what you'd find in modern dictionaries, you find blaham, which is I flower, I bloom, I flourish. I want everyone to learn that and say it, because there is a magic in that word, I think, to say I bloom, and even to say my creativity is in flower, even if it's in the mess, right? There's a flower like a lily coming up out of all that muck.
Well, this feels like the moment to sort of shift and just celebrate. What's over Kate's left shoulder is the book, The Poet on the Train, which is Kate's first novel, which I read all cozied up in bed over the break between Christmas and New Year's, because I know it came out in November of 2025. And this whole book, as I experienced it, is such that exact invitation, as you're naming it, to come to your creative youth and your creative beginnings at any age. And most specifically in poetry, that's of course The Poet on the Train, fascinatingly enough, has a lot of poetry and instigations and invitations to poetry. And it really did plant a seed in my own protean muck of I'm a very prose-ridden woman with many, many important things to do. Who has time for that frivolity of poetry? Well, I have made a good bit more time for it since having read your book and having, heard your voice in my head again. And oh, I'm gonna kind of do a oh squirrel, but I will come back to your book because I want to just, in terms of the weaving of everything that comes together, the very first episode of the season this year was my friend Robert and I. He's from Wicklow. He read Nulinny Gonal's Bladuith, which is, of course, the maiden made of flowers. He read a bit of it in the Irish, and I read a bit of it in the English. So the fact that here we are talking
Oui.
about the blah, talking about the flowers, talking about the poetry, talking about that creative magic. I just want to just, I guess, stick a loving pin in it on the cork board that we're creating, not because we want to display it, but because it's such a beautiful way of gathering together all the threads of this conversation.
Yes, like a floral wreath, right? Yeah, like a garland of flowers. It's actually, right? I always love to remember that that's what anthology means, literally, is a garland of flowers.
No one knows that but you. I mean, obviously a couple of other people, but I like to remember that, or I like to learn that for the very first time. So thank you for that one.
I love all the connections and following this, following the threads does lead us round. We're often in spirals and circles
And
of
maybe we
creative
always are if we
energies.
allow ourselves to notice, right?
I think so. I think so. I feel like life is creating a curriculum for us. You know what I mean? And it might take a little while to see it. But if you're looking for it, you will see it. You'll say, ah, I was provided with that and that and that, and those came together. And it's very reassuring, actually, to look for that and realize there is a drawing together of all those threads. And you are your greatest art, always.
And
Your
isn't
make
that
the art you're making really is your life, always.
And isn't that what magic really is? Is the noticing and saying, oh, maybe it's all connected. And either because it truly is all connected, if that's your metaphysics and your understanding, or because the alchemy and magic of our lives is recognizing we could be there for the connections and be the connective tissue.
Hear, hear. I always say the first principle of the magician is selection. And so that is a form of selection, isn't it? Right? It is, I am choosing to see this. I'm choosing to see my life imla or fuivla in flower. I'm choosing to see the curriculum life is setting for me that is equipping me with what I need for the next chapter of my creative life or my whole life, really. Yes. So seeing that and feel it, I mean, I'm so happy we're having this conversation in the merry old month of May, which is really one of the most magical months of the year. The whole world is fuivla, is in bloom, at least here in our hemisphere, but yes.
And when you say that, was it selection? That's what you said, right?
Yes.
Selection. And that reminds when I've had the good fortune lately, because again, poetry in 2026 just seems to be part of the myth of the year is coming up for me in poetry. And I've had a chance to sit with more poets than ever. Generally, as a writing coach, I'm sitting with the novelists and the memoirists. But in sitting with more poets, as they've asked me to be with them in their journeys, it's this sense of I find myself calling again and again on that sense of intentionality and of that sense of, when they're going through a second draft of like, yes, that first spirals of inspiration and how it came, and that is wonderful. And then in the working through and asking words, well, why are you here? Like what, and it like what is what, frankly, what's your job here? And what's your contribution? What's your magic? What would you like us to see? And I've noticed I'm that sense of when the poet's sort of like, I don't really know. I'm like, well, then could we ask it for what its intention is and perhaps ask another word or phrase to come in instead? It feels like an extension of that selection process is then knowing what, not knowing what your intentions are, but being with the gift of intentionality and saying, oh, yeah, I've been with the words enough to know who's asked to show up and who I've asked to be here.
I love that, and I like how you're relating that to the spirals and the straight lines, right? Allowing Avrigan to write the poem and Athernia to revise it. So wise, so wise, right? Because just to say, even though I've emphasized the institutionality of Athernia to become the chief poet, to become the philia, right? The alu, the olive or alu, to become that professor of poetry required immense formal training. And we need both, right? We do need, as you say, to be looking at it isn't all diamonds in the muck. It is muck, some of it. I'm
Mm-hmm.
speaking for my own poems here. But I've always said I like to pick up my poem like an apple and feel for the bruise under the skin, because you can tell there's like always a place where your thumb goes. You know when you have like an apple and you go, oh, there's going to be like a brown mucky part under there. I feel like that in a poem too, and you go, oh, I want to bring the rest of it is juicy, sweet, crisp apple flesh. I want to bring this. I'm taking this out, right? And that's an athernia action. That's a chief poet action to go, and that's also it's a magician action. It's a magician action to be instigating the poem, but it's also a magician action to say that misses the mark. I feel the energy has flagged there. There's so much. I mean, I love when I sit with people in poems is to say, where do you feel the most energy in what you've written? Like, where do you just like sit up straight and feel that sparkle of energy? And where do you feel less of that? And can you bring that other part so up to that same level of excitement or engagement or aliveness as that other part? So yeah, we do. We need the spirals and the straight lines, and we need the avrogens and the athernias. We need everybody, all of that, to be cooperating, to have the joy of actually producing something that we can, that feels like it's gone through its full growth cycle as well, right? Like, because I know there will be people listening who might not resonate with the idea of sharing poetry, which is totally, totally cool. You do, no one has to share anything they do. And yet there's a pleasure in actually coming to fruition with something. And I'll just say about my book, I was halfway through writing the book. I was writing every day, full steam ahead. And then it was about June. So I had started in January, and I was writing, I don't know, 300, 500 words a day. And I was like really having a great time. And then the bottom fell out. I don't know what happened to me, but I just thought, I'll tell you what I thought. I thought, here's another project that's going to break my heart. And what are you doing? You're just like, and I suppose in a way the Athernia was mocking me, was saying, here's something that people are going to find, it's too good-hearted. It's too full of nice people. That's not what people want anymore. All of this, it's going to be painful. And I sat in my excrement up to my hips, I'll say, for a couple of days. And then I thought, but I want to do this. I want to be a novelist in this world, in this life. I love these characters. I love this book. I love this experience of writing the book. If it never sees a reader, I'm writing the book. And so I tell that story for anybody listening who feels like not drawn to sharing, but just to say that completing something changes you in important ways, and giving ourselves that gift of seeing it through to our own specifications, to our own standards, is very, very empowering. And I want that for anyone who wants it for themselves. It's important.
Okay, well, I want to talk to you all day and keep weaving around, but at the same time, it just feels like that sense of completion that you just named feels like exactly where I would love to leave our
I'm glad.
listeners, to invite them to begin in the muck and then stay in the muck amongst the diamonds and amongst the lotus flowers as they emerge, and
Yes.
then also have the courage to find the shore on the other side. That has us holding our own books in our hands or sitting in that circle and saying the poem out loud, even when our voices shake and everything in between.
Yes, being compassionate to that avrogen in ourselves, and also to the athernia in ourselves, both sides. Luckily, we do have that blacksmith to help us,
To temper it
the one
all.
who does transformation all day, every day. That lives in us too.
Oh, well, Kate, Mila Buikas, thank you so much for being
Atha
here
Faltarul
and
Dastoor.
sharing all of this so Beautifully. Oh, do you want to say a couple of words about where people can find more of you and your poetry and your Irish and your everything that you offer in your music? Kate has been such a beautiful voice in my children's ears in terms of teaching my older daughter to sing, and she's really just blossomed with Kate so beautifully over the years.
You have wonderful girls. You can find me on YouTube. I tell a story every week or share folklore every week. Kate Chadbourne Bard, if you want to look that up. And my website is katechadbourne.com. And I would welcome connection. So thank you. And the poet on the train, if you feel like writing poems or you feel like a story, luxury train travel, go for it. I would be so honored if you'd read my book.
Beautiful. Oh, well, Kate, thank you for coming back to us and sharing with us this gorgeous story and these reflections, the straight lines and the spirals. You know, I keep thinking now of Ernest Hemingway's line about write drunk, edit sober, you know, and that sort of had that rough literalism of him in there. But now it feels so much more poetic because now it's about writing with Avergan and editing with Atherton.
You got it. That's right. Let's do that.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Kate.
Thank you so much, too.
Thank you for tuning in to Knot Work Myth and Storytelling. Please subscribe and review the show on your favorite podcast platform, and do share this episode with other lovers of mythology and story. Want more knot work in your life? Please consider becoming a paid subscriber to my newsletter, The Mythworker's Hearth, over on Substack. As a paid subscriber, you'll have access to the special new podcast series called Touras, which takes you even deeper into mythology, landscape, and the creative journey. And yes, that's a new name. You may know my newsletter as Myth is Medicine. It's now The Mythworker's Hearth. Creating this show is a labor of love, and your support will help me continue to craft and share stories throughout this season and beyond. You can find out more about my writing, my book, The Sovereignty Knot, A Woman's Way to Freedom, Power, Love, and Magic, our online writing communities, including the Author's Knot, as well as how to work with me as a writing coach over at my website, marisagowdy.com. Music on the show is by Beth Sweeney and Billy Hardy, a Celtic fiddle and multi-instrumental duo based on Cape Cod, Massachusetts. Find out about their music and shows at billyandbeth.com. My own work is inspired and sourced through a connection to my Irish ancestors. Gratefully, I live, write, work, and record this podcast on the ancestral lands of the Lenape, whose name means original people.